Al Pacino in various acting roles.
He's an icon, an Oscar winner, and without doubt, one of the greatest screen actors of all time.
Hoo-ah!
Al Pacino. His place in movie history was assured from the moment he joined one of cinema's most famous and feared families.
You're my older brother, and I love you. But don't ever take sides with anyone against the family again.
Since that introduction, he's had us transfixed with an extraordinary run of films, including Dog Day Afternoon, Serpico, Carlito's Way, Heat, The Insider, and The Irishman. Dragging you in with big, sometimes scene-chewing performances, and then spitting you out at the end credits.
Keep your nose clean, be a good owner, follow the rules, and who knows, maybe one day when they open the books, you get straightened out.
When he wrong-footed critics and served up his most quoted of script lines,
say hello to my little friend!
He blasted wide open the debate over levels of violence in mainstream cinema. A conversation that remains relevant even to this day, just like his career, still active, creative, and engaged after six decades.
I don't know how to do anything else.
Neither do I.
I don't much want to either.
Neither do I.
Now, for the first time, Al Pacino has written down his own story from growing up in New York to the present day here in Los Angeles, where he's lived for a quarter of a century to be near his children. And last year, he became a dad again.
And that is just one of the many subjects which feature in his new autobiography, Sonny Boy, and that he recently discussed with me, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood.
Al Pacino, Once Upon a Time in Hollywood. A black and white photo of a young Al Pacino with a toy gun, then an extract from Sonny Boy, courtesy of Penguin Random House Audiobooks.
I was performing since I was just a little boy. My mother used to take me to the movies when I was as young as 3 or 4 years old. She didn't know that she was supplying me with a future. I was immediately attached to watching actors on the screen. Since I never had playmates in our apartment and we didn't have television set yet, I would have nothing but time to think about the movie I had seen the night before. I'd go through the characters in my head and I would bring them to life in a way, one by one, in the apartment I lived in. I learned at an early age to make friends with my imagination.
Colin Patterson and Al Pacino both clap.
Al Pacino.
Yes.
Autobiographies. Drew Barrymore was 15 when she wrote her first one. Miley Cyrus, 16. The British footballer Wayne Rooney, he waited till he was 20. You, 84. Why the wait?
I'm in my 85th year. That's boasting. I don't know. I mean, it was New Year's Eve. Seemed like a good idea at the time. That's what someone texted me before. Just said, she said, what are you doing? What's the matter with you? Why do you write a memoir? I thought, well, I don't know. I mean, things happen. They just happen. You know, I'm here. I'm still here. 2 years ago, I wouldn't have written a menu. A menu, I call it. It's a memoir. A menu. My first menu.
Your first menu, yeah.
Now I gotta get a restaurant.
He swiftly chops celery in 1991's Frankie and Johnny.
All right. Hoppa. Chop that celery, boy. That's a good way of losing a finger, my man.
But enough has happened to me that it could possibly be interesting for someone to read, I thought. And to just go down. It was fun once I started it. I enjoyed thinking about things that had happened to me and my childhood and stuff. And that sort of was spurring me on. I thought this is something to get into and think about.
They call me Sonny and Pachi, their nickname for Pacino. They also Call me Pistachio. I like pistachio ice cream, so they call me that. When I started smoking cigarettes somewhere between the age of 10 and 11, I made sure I was in the alleyway where no one would see me because I knew that smoking was not allowed. I would imagine tawdry things were done down there. Whatever was forbidden was done down there. I just had the feeling that that came off the alleyway, you know. It had that feeling, but it wasn't frightening. It was inviting to me. I mean, the first time I kissed a girl, it was down there in those alleys. I didn't know what I was doing, but I thought something spectacular had happened. I thought I lost my virginity. Sadly, not. And I did it, and I sort of regret it, but at the same time, it's done, you know. So we'll see.
The autobiography deals a lot with family and fatherhood, yes, obviously. And you became a father again last year.
Oh,
how,
yeah,
have you reacted to that?
Well, it's extraordinary. I've reacted to it as many ways as you could possibly react to it. It's wonderful. You know, I have this little person who's talking to me, but he's not. He's still, you know, too young. Everything he does is real. Everything he does is interesting to me, you know. So we talk. I play the harmonica with him. And we have made this kind of contact. So it's fun. It's fun to have that. I got four kids now. And you realize how much fun it is to have children. And of course, all the things that come with it.
There is a certain fascination with you being a dad at 83. Did you have any reservations about the age?
I'd want to be around for this child. Of course I did. And I hope I am. I hope I stay healthy. And he know who his dad is. Of course.
Something that hasn't always stayed healthy is Pacino's bank balance. Take a Hollywood lifestyle, combine with some wild spending, add a crooked accountant who ended up behind bars, and you're left with nothing when you thought you'd got $50 million tucked away.
And I was broke. I gotta say this, it's gonna hurt your feelings, it's gonna hurt my feelings to repeat it, but I had $50 million, and then I had nothing. The kind of money I was spending and where it was going was just so crazy. It was just crazy. A montage of loss. The door was wide open and people who I didn't know were living off me. It was come one, come all. Al's got it and he doesn't care. Even though I only had two cars, I was somehow paying for 16, along with the 23 cell phones I didn't know about. Oh, how about the landscaper? He was getting $400,000 a year. And mind you, that was for landscaping at a house I didn't even live in. I don't exaggerate these things. I just want you to know. It just went on and on. I wasn't even signing my own checks. The accountant signed them. I just let it go by. I wasn't looking and he didn't tell me how much I had or where it was going. And I wasn't keeping track of who got what. It was all about, let's keep this dumb actor happy. Just keep him working. He likes to work. And we will reap.
2011, you basically go, I'm running out of money.
I was out of money. I was gone. And my accountant was in prison because of it. And other people, too.
You go into the amount of money you were spending every month.
Oh, my God.
$400,000
a month. And didn't know about it. And didn't know about it. Yeah.
How does that happen?
No, you got to be dumb enough, first of all. I just didn't get it, you know. I still don't. I don't understand that kind of thing. And I don't know why. I heard Francis Coppola recently talking about he doesn't care. He says, money is not first. It just never was with me. Although, I mean, we need it. We have to have it, you know, and I'm all for it. But at the same time, I just don't understand it. And so.
You say in the book that it did affect your choice of films and you were doing projects,
yes,
for
exactly,
the money.
That's right.
How's that experience?
Well, when you got it, you got it. You know, sometimes you just... My experience is the work, the fact that I'm lucky enough to be in the position that I'm in, that I can work and get paid for it like that. And it was in my 70s. You're not getting the same paydays anymore. Things change. But that was all right. I found ways of dealing with it.
Wow!
Al Pacino!
It's not Al anymore. It's Dunk!
Dunkachino?
What's my name?
Dunkachino!
Dunkachino!
Jack and Jill, 2011.
And boom, there you have it. It's actually 32 seconds, so I gotta lose 2 seconds. Maybe you can tell me what part you would lose, but I think we are getting there.
Burn this.
I made some adjustments, but I still, every role I play, I'm playing it. It's serious to me. I'm gonna try to present something with my successes, my failures. It's like, you know, you just keep going. You just keep going. That's it.
Hey, remember me? Benny Blanco from the Bronx?
Over the years, Al Pacino has died on screen more times than most, usually dispatched with a bullet. But in 2020, an encounter with COVID resulted in a real-life near-death experience. Exactly how near? 4 years later, he's still not sure.
A montage of screen deaths.
You seem to still be trying to work out whether you did die or not.
I don't think I died. I thought I did. It felt like I did because there was something, then there was nothing. No fall, no anything. There was just nothing, which was, in retrospect, was sort of frightening. Everybody sort of flipped out. I was out, and they got an ambulance. They got these paramedics, because when I opened my eyes, there were five paramedics in my living room. There were two doctors who looked like spacemen, and there was an ambulance in front of my house. Maybe I know I'd been a little different since it happened, so maybe I got a new brain or something. Maybe something happened to me that is...
How has it changed you?
Well, I'm with you now talking. How about that? And I'm doubting it. That's the beauty of it. That's what happened to me.
Because in the book,
I'm thinking, am I gonna not be here all of a sudden? You know, you have that. Once you have it, you can relive it.
There was no white tunnels.
No white tunnels. No, nothing. It's like Shakespeare says, in to be or not to be. No more. No more. Any way you want to say it.
You've styled it out, basically.
I know. People think I don't believe in an afterlife, because I said that I saw nothing when I was. Maybe there's no afterlife for me, you know. Maybe if someone else is going somewhere, because they did what I didn't do.
There's no sequel.
No sequel. No, exactly. I think it's crazy. It's too much to even comprehend how, why you can actually go through this life. And then it's over, and you don't even know about it. You don't even, all the things I remember are in, they died out, it's all over. It's very hard to conceive of that. There have been great people who have and thought it through and talked about it, but it's something I don't think I have any idea what to expect.
Just lie here, Bob. I'll take care of you. I'm with you now. I'm with you.
In The Godfather from 1972, directed by Francis Ford Coppola, he sits at the bedside of his ailing father, played by Marlon Brando. Tears shine on the old man's smiling face as his son leans down to kiss his hand before striding away along a hospital corridor.
Let's talk about The Godfather.
Yes, finally.
When I say
something that I understand.
When I say that, how does it make you feel? Do you still feel like proud of it? Do you feel excited to talk about it?
You know, I was in it. How did that happen? I was lucky because Francis Coppola saw me on stage on Broadway. He had just won an Oscar for Patton, George C. Scott's Patton. And I really liked him. I talked with him for 3 or 4 days. He got to know each other. You know, we spent all day together. And it was fine. I enjoyed the company. And I went on. I was doing theater, whatever. I did The Panic in Needle Park, my first film.
I want you to do me a favor. I want you to go up to 119th Street for me.
And what's your score for me?
You could.
Yeah, I could.
Yeah. You're not just asking me to score for you, you're asking something else.
Which I liked very much, and Jerry Schatzberg directed it.
And showing 8 minutes of that helped convince the studio to give you a go. But once you were in the role of the Godfather, they wanted rid of you. How close did you come to being sacked from the Godfather?
Well, I guess it's when your director talks to you and says, you know, I had a lot of faith in you, man. What's happening? You're not delivering. And you hear the chirping all around. You start to feel, I don't think I'm wanted here. And that's not a pleasant feeling. It's also a feeling you want to get away from, too. Yeah, I mean, it's embarrassing enough to be a famous person, but to be someone who is, along there with, and everybody is, you're doing something that is being rejected right in front of you. I didn't know what I was doing right or wrong, but Francis told me, I want you to take a look at the rushes, the footage that we had shot, because you're not making it, you're not cutting it. So I said, okay, I'll take a look. I kind of knew I wasn't, but I was prepared for that because that was the way I wanted to go with the character. I wanted to start from, you know, someone who was he wasn't someone you recognized right away or your eye went to. He was in the background.
Dressed in military uniform, Al Pacino's character leads a young woman onto a crowded, sunlit dance floor as someone watches through a window blind.
And that was my plan, to go through the entire text and have this arc. And finally reach to the part where you say, what? Where did this guy come from? This is an enigma, you know. That's what I was going for. I didn't know how to articulate what I was doing. I didn't know how to say to Francis, well, this is the way I'm starting. But I have plans to take this character into different levels until he's, you know, where he winds up.
But they were losing patience.
Oh, yeah. They wanted something else.
According to film folklore, and with those movie executives circling, Francis Ford Coppola made sure Pacino became the leading man they couldn't refuse, treating them to an early look at Michael Corleone's dark side by changing the Godfather's shooting schedule. And we do mean shooting.
In a restaurant, he shoots two suited diners in the forehead. Then, as the second falls forward, knocking over a table, Al Pacino's character picks up his coat and hurries away, dropping his revolver as he goes. Neon lights glow in the restaurant windows as the killer then runs off into the night, leaving the bloody corpses behind.
They say that Francis moved that scene up. He claims he didn't. But it seems like that would be the thing to do, get to the meat, because that's what the studio wants to see.
And that saved
you. So it saved me. I got in that scene, and I did it not knowing what was going on. I always felt I wasn't wanted, and that kind of feeling. And, you get used to anything. You're playing a role. You're doing what you do. Where are you? Where'd you come from? Where are you going? All that stuff. And I'm in the scene, and I just was doing it. And the next thing you know, I blow those two guys out, and then I'm running out of the restaurant. I throw the gun, and I jump on a cab, on the waiting car for me, and I miss the walk on the, you know, the little thing they have on the car that you step on and go in. I don't know the name of that. And I fall. I fell, and I was like, at my ankle, and I looked up to heaven. It's the truth. I said, thank you, God. I'm out of this picture.
But they liked what you've done.
That's the truth.
They liked what you've done and saved you.
I guess so. But they could, you know, repair my ankle. That's the big thing. This will be shot it up with formaldehyde. The next thing you know, I'm not feeling anything in it. But I don't know if it's broke or not.
But I recovered. I got back, and they liked the scene, and that was it.
Who were they going to replace you with, do you think? Could you see anyone lurking around?
Bob De Niro comes to mind.
Well, you could have been in an earlier Godfather.
Yeah.
He got into the...
He was great in that Godfather 2.
Yeah. Honestly think they could have replaced you with him for the first one?
Yeah, sure. Why not? Well, you know, I'm not irreplaceable. Not yet. To me, Godfather is a great film because of Francis Ford Coppola. And how he put that together, I'll never know.
And in real life, how many times have you been asked to be a godfather?
I'm surprised I can't remember being asked that, but I'm sure that's the kind of
I'm
thing
I'm not convinced
don't...
you have here, Al.
Huh?
Are you sure you've been?
I don't know. I mean, I'm not convinced, but I haven't. I don't know. I guess...
You can't name them. If you have been, you've forgotten about them, haven't you?
I know, it's very strange. No, I don't remember anybody asking me that. I remember when I first did The Godfather, when I first came out, they would call me that on the streets, especially the streets of New York City. I had one time a woman come up to me and just kiss my hand like this, an old Italian woman. It was amazing. I wasn't used to that. Wasn't prepared for it. And it was strange, but cool. I said, thank you. Thank you very much. And I gave her a hug. But it's funny. When fame comes, it comes in bits and pieces. And you're adjusting all the time what to do. And then sooner or later, you know, it starts to take hold, and you start to really understand that it's going on for real.
I never wanted this for you. I worked my whole life. I don't apologize to take care of my family. And I refused to be a fool. Dancing on the string, held by all those big shots. I don't apologize, that's my life, but I thought that but when it was your time, that you would be the one to hold the strings.
Marlon Brando,
yes.
One of your all-time heroes.
I loved it.
On the set of The Godfather.
Oh, yeah.
Coppola says, you've got to go and meet him for lunch. This is quite an experience for you.
Well, I guess so. It was my first lunch with Marlon Brando. When the cast got together for the first time, we were all together at Patsy's in Harlem. And we were sitting at the table, and there was Marlon sitting at the head. He's the godfather. And all of the actors in it, Jimmy Caan, Bobby Duvall, my friend John Cassell, they started to go into these characters that they were playing in the film, including me. I started to get kind of sulk and get a little, moody. But eventually it was over, and we had Italian dinner. Then I didn't speak to him for the rest, but he was very gentle, very sensitive to me. He knew something was going on, and he was very for me to be in the film, which was wonderful. And I just loved him.
This wasn't enough time, Michael. Wasn't enough time.
We'll get there, Pop. We'll get there.
Just to work with him, his acting, and. Anyway, I didn't want to go to lunch with him. I mean, what am I going to talk about? Anyway, I had lunch with him in the hospital room with two hospital beds facing each other. Like the way you're sitting on the edge of that chair, I was sitting here.
It's a set. This is part of the set.
Part of the set. Yeah, it's in a hospital. And we're having lunch, which is chicken cacciatore, which has a lot of gravy and... You know,
it's a saucy dish, isn't it?
Yeah, saucy. Yeah. And there's sauce around. I'm not eating anything. I just wasn't hungry. But he is. And he's talking to me in between things. And I'm thinking, what is he going to do with the chicken he's nibbling on? I'm saying, what's going to happen to that chicken? Because we're in two beds. There's no tables. There's just the beds. And I'm looking at him. His hands are full
covered.
Covered with gravy and sauce and stuff. And I'm just looking at it. And I'm not hearing anything he's saying. I'm just fixed on what he's going to do with that. Finally, I saw it. And at first, I couldn't believe it. And then I thought, this is happening. He takes his hands and on these hospital white sheets goes behind himself like this and just wipes them off on the bed.
Ooh.
And I'm sitting there thinking, ah, that's what movie stars do.
And that's what Pacino was now too. A real movie star with acting talent for all to see, and his first Oscar nomination as well, although that would affect his relationship with Hollywood for years.
I've only recently learned that the perception in the industry was that, believe it or not, I snubbed the Oscars, that I didn't attend the ceremony because I was nominated for The Godfather as a supporting actor and not as a leading man. That somehow I felt slighted because I thought I deserved to be nominated in the same category as Marlon Brando. Can you imagine that was? That's a rumor. It exploded at the time. Who knew it? I didn't know anything. I lived in New York. I didn't read the papers. I only found out recently, all these years later, I'm finding out that was a rumor that was out when I was just a young man. It explains a lot of the distance I felt when I came out to Hollywood to visit and to work. But they had me down as some sort of arrogant snob, let's face it. And that became lore.
Despite that, these were exciting times, and Al wasn't the only new kid in Tinseltown.
In the 70s, you and Robert De Niro were both having these explosions at the same time. You know, yeah. He's doing Mean Streets.
Dustin Hoffman was in there. They used to put the three of us together a lot. I remember that. We were the three short New Yorkers. No, we were the three, we were New York actors.
Were you in competition?
Well, yeah, in a way, when you think of it, yeah. I mean, it wasn't out now, competition that was abusive or anything. It was just a fact that and we were offered similar roles. And, so it has an aura of competition. You hear it a lot. I don't hear it anymore. I haven't for many years, especially since we've done some things together.
You know, we're sitting here, you and I are like a couple of regular fellas. I mean, you do what you do, I do what I gotta do. And now that we've been face to face, if I'm there and I gotta put you away, I won't like it. But I'll tell you, if it's between you and some poor bastard whose wife you're gonna turn into a widow, brother, you are going down.
Despite them both starring in The Godfather Part 2, Heat, made 20 years later, was the first time Pacino and De Niro had appeared together on screen. One reason for that long wait might just be Hollywood's seemingly random casting processes, which can leave even the biggest stars pondering over a long list of movie might-have-beens dating back to the 1970s.
It's a heck of a time for cinema. New Hollywood and George Lucas wanted you to be Han Solo in Star Wars. Why didn't you go for that one?
Well, I was doing a play at the time, and I got the script, and I thought, oh, tremendous offer. I read the script, and I don't understand it. I mean, how am I going to play it? I don't know. I don't understand these things.
Any regrets?
No, not on that. Plenty of regrets, but not on that. No.
It's part of the actor's job. You'll always have to pass on roles that then go on to be huge. Can I just run you through some of the ones that you had to pass on?
Sure.
We're in Beverly Hills.
Huh?
Pretty Woman. You were offered it before Richard Gere.
Yeah, I was. But I sort of don't like to talk about that because the actors were perfect for the part.
Right.
I wasn't. Which brings me, I say it in the book, I won't do a part if I feel I'm going to have a hard time with it or trouble with it. Richard was perfect for it. It fit him at the time so well. I love Richard Gere. I think he's a great actor. And I've seen him do such great stuff. So that becomes it's these things happen all the time. People get offered roles that you want to do.
Yeah.
It's the way it is.
Die Hard. Could you really have worn the vest?
No. I couldn't have done any of that. Bruce Willis is a champion. I mean, he's also a wonderful actor. And he is also someone who's able to bring to that kind of thing just the right tone. He is. He just is. That's why he went on to be someone who makes big movies and also small movies, by the way.
Is the one that haunts you that you turn down and think, oh, I really should have done that?
There's a few, but I can't mention.
Go on. No, Give us one.
I can't do that to my fellow actor. No, I can't.
Oh.
I feel it. I really feel it.
But you can still, but you can big them up because you could say, I'm annoyed because they were so good and that could have been me.
Well, I could
go on,
say,
give us one.
I know a few who were great in the role, greater than I could ever be. And that's the truth. And about these things, I tell the truth, really.
He wouldn't play ball, but here are even more of the roles for which Pacino could have been a contender. Axel Foley in Beverly Hills Cop. Remarkably, at one point, he was in line to play Rambo. How about Tom Cruise's part in Born on the 4th of July? Dustin Hoffman's in Kramer vs. Kramer? And even De Niro's in Taxi Driver? And if it weren't for the fact that filming in the jungle sounded like a nightmare, he was definitely interested in facing up to Marlon Brando again in Francis Ford Coppola's Apocalypse Now.
One role you did get, Tony Montana, Scarface.
Yes.
Even as I say that, you start smiling.
Yes.
What is it about that film?
I don't know, man. It's got something. I recently saw it for the first time in years on a big screen, and it had the energy, and it started, and I was very, very taken with it. I mean, it was powerful.
In Scarface from 1983, directed by Brian De Palma, Pacino's character loads an automatic rifle before shooting from a landing during an intense gun battle.
I stood in the emergency room of a Santa Monica hospital looking like someone who had already died. I was waiting to be treated by a doctor. My eyes were limp and gray, my skin soaked with sweat, my clothes were ragged and stained with blood. I had been told to keep my arms high in the air, both of them, because the machine gun I had been using had become fused to my hand. In the character's drug-induced state, I grabbed the red-hot barrel of the machine gun I had just been firing that was lying right next to me. And suddenly, my hand wouldn't move. It was stuck to the barrel. This is really a happy story. You make a film like Scarface. It took us almost a year making it, actually shooting it with the great Brian De Palma and the great Oliver Stone writing it and Marty Brickman, the great producing it. It's his vision. And they just got blasted by the press and everything. There was people coming, you know, we had an audience, but it didn't last. It wasn't promoted because once that happened, it was just gone.
Blasted by the American press, maybe, but here the BBC's Man at the Movies was much more open-minded.
Film 84, presented by Barry Norman, February 1984.
Now, I think I should perhaps warn you that Scarface is both physically and verbally a very violent film. Practically everybody ends up riddled with bullets and screaming four-letter words with their dying breath. It's not a subtle film. People say things like, "I think you speak from the heart, Montana," but it has a vivid raw energy and aggressive vulgarity that perfectly matches the story of the rise and fall of this spectacularly nasty little crook. It doesn't have the sweep of the Godfather saga, but against that, it does have drive and vigour, a good deal of crude humour, and some very fine performances, especially by Michelle Pfeiffer. Al Pacino is most convincing as a mobster, but the scenes of his disintegration when overcompensating for the fact that he wasn't born with a silver spoon up his nose, he gets hooked on his own goods and crouches behind his desk, burying his head from time to time in what looks like the EEC Coke Mountain, are both powerful and horrifying.
Al also revealed in that program which fellow actor most inspired his portrayal of the coked-up killing machine, and it was an unexpected choice.
I was very inspired by Meryl Streep's work in Sophie's Choice. I thought that her way of involving herself in that kind of thing, playing someone who is from another country and another world, was particularly fine and committed and courageous, and it was very inspiring to me.
So there you go. Meryl Streep influenced the powerhouse performance that helped Scarface survive the hail of bullets it had received from most of the critics.
Its reputation just built and built and built, especially with love from the hip-hop community.
That's right. It was the hip-hop community. It was the rappers that embraced it and were able to see the story in there.
Is there part of you that wishes your best actor Oscar was for that film?
Pacino grins.
Yeah, that's interesting. I didn't get nominated for that film. But I was doing a play in San Francisco. And when I came out in the afternoon and the nominations had come out, I wasn't nominated. The crowd that was out there waiting for me when I did this Oscar like this for me, a made Oscar, it was much bigger than the original, and they presented it to me. And I thought, I still have it, you know, it's, that was a great gift. I mean, it really touched me.
So, not even an Oscar nomination for his role in what's been described as one of the greatest gangster films of all time. And it wasn't until Scent of a Woman, 10 years later, and his 8th nomination, that Pacino finally shook off that Oscars jinx and won the big one. Best Actor for his performance as retired Army General Frank Slade. Alcoholic, aggressive.
Touch me again, I'll kill you, you little son of a bitch.
And blind. But also irresistibly charming when he wanted to be, and irresistible to the voters at the Academy.
In a scene from 1992's Scent of a Woman, directed by Martin Brest, Frank Slade dances with a young woman in a black evening dress. She giggles as he dips and spins her on the dance floor, while musicians play and well-dressed diners look on.
If you've been around a lot, sooner or later, and you've been nominated, they're sort of looking for a way to give you an Oscar, you know? It's funny. And not that I turned my back on Scent of a Woman, I understand, but that's where I received it. That was after 8 nominations.
8. And it is a great film.
It's a wonderful film. Oh, yeah.
I don't think it's the one that people are going to remember you by. That's what I'm kind of saying. Yeah. I'm trying to do it in a polite way.
We can sit here and I can talk about my package of what I've done. What I've done over 50 films. And some of them didn't see the light of day when they should have, and some saw the light of day when they shouldn't have. So, you know, it's just a question of you go with the glow.
Because some people, I guess, could have some concern that people actually aspire to be Tony Montana.
And that's one of the reasons why Brian De Palma upped the ante and called it an opera. And it has that operatic style to it and the expression of an artist about something that is a metaphor, not real. And it takes you out.
if you so feel that way. A lot of people loathe Scarface. They don't want to see it. But I usually take people like that who are friends of mine and really didn't care for the film. And I took them when they were showing it in the big theaters with a lot of people. I took them there. I said, just see it with an audience. Because an audience laughs at certain things. They recognize. They recognize what's behind it, the context and everything else. So that makes the audience, if you get, understand it more. Mm-hmm. It needs that. That gives them a subtitle when they hear the laughs at certain points. Oh, that's really is funny when you think of it, you know. And they come out, and it's not like they think it's the greatest film ever made, but they appreciate the film.
Carlito's Way, 1992, directed by Brian De Palma. Lying on a moving escalator, Pacino's character picks off suited gunmen as passengers take cover on a railway station concourse. A body slides down the steel slope between two escalators as the bullets fly.
You have played a lot of alpha male characters
Yes.
over the years. How do you think masculinity has changed during your career?
The standouts usually have me with a gun. Mm. They say, give Pacino a gun, you got to hit.
How does that make you feel, that quote?
Well, if I tell you the truth, if it's true, fine. It's okay. They said that about James Cagney, Edward G. Robinson, Humphrey Bogart. These were big stars. But, you know, Edward G. Robinson was nothing like his films. And he was a great actor. So was Cagney. Orson Welles says Cagney's the greatest actor that he ever saw. And so it's very tricky. And you have to understand that you get parts that are suited. And if you score in those roles, there's more to come. Mm-hmm. But I try to say this, and pardon me if I'm being a little...
He sips from a glass of water.
A little too, but I have to say it.
This sounds promising.
Yeah. Well, you take the characters I played. You take Godfather, you take Donnie Brasco, different, not the same people. You take Scarface, certainly different than those two. Carlito's Way, different. So I don't see a similarity even. They belong in a certain spectrum, but they're different. I don't see repeating in those characters. I try to avoid that.
You've played a lot of real characters as well, everyone from Hoffa to Phil Spector. Now your book's out there.
Yeah.
If someone bought the rights to that, how would you feel about your life story being turned into a film with someone playing you?
I would be sort of embarrassed, but it's okay, you know, I mean.
Why would you be embarrassed?
I don't know why. I mean, because it's not me, really. But that's okay. You know, I mean, I did Serpico, right? Mm-hmm. Serpico, big picture. But, I mean, when it was on the stands to buy the book, and there was my picture on the cover, Serpico, I said, but it's a book. And it's that I'm not Serpico, but I was a famous actor. So, you know, how do you think he felt, you know?
That'd be a heck of a thing for someone to play Al Pacino.
Really?
Yeah.
Well, there's me and then there's the roles I played.
I open up a box of Havanas. I light up, I pour myself a cognac, and I watch the 14 fists of McCluskey. What a picture.
What a picture.
Good picture, yeah.
That is so much fun. All the shooting.
Once Upon a Time in Hollywood, 2019.
I love that stuff, you know, the killing.
A lot of killing.
Who do you view nowadays as being like, say, three actors who could be the equivalent of that?
That's something good to think about. I would have to think about it. You know, there are actors I really like today. They're wonderful actors today. Well, of course, there's Leo.
DiCaprio.
There's yep. Adam Driver.
All right, yeah.
And some of the others. These are well-known.
Yeah.
You can say their names and people know who you're talking about.
Maurizio,
Yes.
How are you?
Good.
You had a good day today, huh? It was good. I mean, I showed you everything I could show you in one sitting.
Yes, thank you very much, Uncle.
I'm glad.
It's beautiful here.
I say this because Patricia has told me that you may be interested in learning about our business. I can see others coming along, you know. They're coming along. And I'm very thrilled by some of the performances I've been seeing. There's quantity. You know, and you've got those streamers. A lot of actors are working today. They're doing things. There's parts. There's projects. And that's a positive thing.
How worried are you about the future of cinema when there's the stats that ticket sales have gone down 40% in a decade?
I've seen so many things come and go that I don't know. If you're an actor, they recently had a strike. We got AI coming too, which who knows. But things evolve. We are a species that evolves. Look at us now. I mean, things happen. People want to be entertained. The times, too, what's going on, everything. So you're really, for instance, I got a couple of things I'm doing now. I try to keep the roles to a minimum in terms of not large parts, which I enjoy doing because I have to go through all the things I go through when I do a large role. You have to become a character and stuff. But I do have another large role coming up, which is Frank Lloyd Wright, which is an incredible project to play this person. And the script is good, so I've been dealing with it, and I'll take it on. And what will happen?
You are someone who grew up going to the cinema, and it's clear just how much that experience meant to you. Mm. 10, 15 years, are there still going to be cinemas to go to?
I hope so. I think that's what it's about. That's what Scorsese is doing. That's what Tarantino is doing. The people who have Francis Coppola is doing it because they understand it. They have control of it. They own it, in other words. That's how they communicate their art form, through film.
Are you worried, though, about cinema when it means so much to you?
No.
The idea of a LA without cinemas.
I don't think that's going to happen. It can't happen.
It was back in 2004 that Pacino won not an Oscar, but an Emmy Award for playing the notorious lawyer Roy Cohn in the drama series Angels in America. By taking on the role, he became one of the biggest Hollywood names to embrace television. Today commonplace, back then unusual for an actor of his stature. But change and what the future may hold is something he has always been relaxed about.
With actors, there's so much talk about, you know, digital representation and how once you've gone, that can live on. How do you feel about your image starring in films in the future?
I can't think about things like that. I mean, what would I know? Who knows? Maybe they get some image that works.
I'm just fascinated whether you're worried by it or not. Like, what emotion would you say with AI?
I'm not worried. I know that my children are going to take over when it's, you know, I'm gone, and they'll take care of it.
You trust them to?
Yeah, I trust them. I trust them. I trust you.
You're going to give them any stipulations, say, right? Don't let my image do this.
No, I don't care about that. Right. I don't. Right now, I'm telling you, I don't. But if it's done, maybe I'll have some feelings about it. I don't know. They have, you know how many years I've been doing this? I've been around doing this? You know the things they said about me? You know the things they attributed certain things that I said? I mean, it's impossible. So you can't, it's when you're in this position of being famous. There's a third rail there that you got to avoid. So I found a way to do it, which is to take it with a grain of salt.
Are you thinking about legacy as well? Is that part of it?
I haven't thought about legacy ever. And I don't know why, because I keep thinking there's something fatal about that. I just don't want to go near a legacy. A legacy is, because things changing all the time. You know, you work for a time, we feel about things the way we do, and then 10 years later, it's gone, and people are interested in other things. Or I don't even think about that. I don't even think about being old, actually. But I feel it. I don't think about it, but I feel it.
Do you?
When I wake up in the morning and I sit at the bed, especially when I'm working, because I've been working a lot these days.
Buongiorno, Sergio. Turn on Channel 7. ABC, FBI. I'm watching your Nebraska gym as we speak.
I think Once Upon a Time in Hollywood is a great film. And the mere fact that I was in it gave me some sort of cachet. I don't know. And then next comes The Irishman. Bob De Niro and Marty Scorsese came to me years before talking about what they were going to do. And I was all for it. And then finally, it's a script. I go out and I do that. I have a huge part. I get a nomination for an Oscar, putting me up against Brad Pitt, Joe Pesci, Anthony Hopkins, and Tom Hanks. I had no problem that night accepting my losing status among those guys. Next thing you know, I'm in The House of Gucci, which is a hot film. Great people like Adam Driver, Lady Gaga, Jared Leto, and my dear friend Jeremy Irons is in it. It didn't get the reception that others got, but it made good at the box office. Plus, it was directed by one of the all-time greats, Ridley Scott, who I really took to. Someone so gifted and so much fun to work with.
We were in Hollywood last night. We went looking for your star on the Walk of Fame.
Poor guys.
Couldn't find it.
You were disappointed.
What is going on?
I haven't looked lately, but I don't remember them ever putting a star in. There are a lot of people who have, but there's also a lot of people who don't have a star.
If Hollywood's committee are watching this interview, would you be quite up for one now?
Of course.
There we go.
Yeah, sure.
Come on, Al Pacino wants his star on the Hollywood Walk of Fame. In the book, chess comes up a lot.
I used to play a lot of chess.
Who's the most famous person you've ever beaten at chess?
I think I might have beaten Dennis Quaid is too good. Jamie Foxx is too good.
Oh, really?
I always try to. On any given Sunday, we all used to play. But Jim Brown was the best. Jim Brown's a great
player. The NFL player.
Yeah, a football player who passed away. I really liked. And he really beat me all the time. But what he had trouble with when he played chess with me, and he said, I don't know what you're going to do because you've got that, you know, eclectic style of thinking, you know. You don't think, you don't do what's expected. That was a huge compliment, I thought, really. I said, that's coming off. That's good.
I like the idea of a Hollywood chess tournament there.
Oh, God, I wouldn't be a part of that. I just can't. I don't have the facilities. I just can't. I just love playing it. It's a great game, but like all things, it's who you play with. Like, it's who you play with. Some people got this aggression in them, and you don't have fun.
Did you ever play Robert De Niro at chess?
Oh, God, no. No, I don't even know if he plays chess.
Right.
But if he played, I'd certainly play him. I'm joking. I love these questions.
It's always interesting when you meet someone like you thinking, right, what am I going to learn about Al Pacino from meeting him?
Yeah.
Your phone cover. Can you show this, please, and explain the story? Because of all the things in the world that I thought Al Pacino would have on his phone cover, I was not expecting Shrek.
Who would be expecting Shrek? Who? That's mine.
Can you explain why you Shrek it?
My youngest daughter was a little younger a few years ago, and she decided, you know, she said, oh, she was big on phone cases for a while there. So she said, can I have your phone, Dad? I'm just gonna. So I gave her my phone, and she came back. And she had this on it. Do you think I could make out what this was? I had no idea what this was, this thing. So I just laughed, you know. And she said, it's Shrek, Dad. I said, Shrek? Wow. I know Shrek somehow. And then I said, yes, the film Shrek, yes. Okay, babe, I'll hold on to it.
Dick Tracy, 1990.
Hello, big boy. I brought your garbage.
Tracy.
We meet again, huh?
Where's Lips? This is a private club, copper. You got a membership card?
Do you?
I own it!
Since when?
Today. I made a deal with Lips.
Lips? Where is he?
I don't know. Must have left town or something.
Well, that's a coincidence.
My new girl, Breathless Mahoney, meet Dick Tracy, a servant of the people, like me.
You like walnuts, don't you, big boy?
I love them. A lot of people like walnuts. They're good for the liver.
Al Pacino's only real foray into comic book adaptations came back in 1990. Cast alongside Warren Beatty and Madonna in Dick Tracy, he was almost unrecognisable, but playing Big Boy Caprice did lead to another Oscar nomination. Now cartoons, animations, Marvel and superheroes are bread and butter in Hollywood, but they're just not to his taste.
You know, you were saying you needed roles for the money. You should have done kids' cartoon voices. That's stabbing an easy one.
I can't do it. I've tried.
Really? You can't do like a cuddly panda or something like that?
I just can't. I mean, I love the kids and everything out there, but at the same time, I can't. I can't do that stuff. I mean...
As in you can't bring yourself to do it or you're not good at it?
I just don't do that thing. I don't know how. I mean, somebody says to me, you gotta be mad now, put on a voice. I don't know how. And when you see the great ones like Robin Williams, the way he did this, it was like a work of art. Aladdin, oh my God, I freaked out. I thought, this is great performance, this Aladdin guy. He was amazing in it. But at the same time, I have no feel for it. If something doesn't touch me in some way, I have no idea what to do. Even in a role, in a picture, in a play. I mean, I just can't do it.
One of the great method actors, but you cannot do cartoon voices.
I think I can. I seriously don't want to.
This is why you don't do Marvel as well, is it?
Well, you know, I don't. I like the Marvel. Marvel's fine. I've seen, you know how you walk in some of these movie houses and you see a film like that with all the work and expertise on it. It's almost like, and you say to yourself, wow, and you see, it's very affecting, I must say, but I have no interest in doing it for me. No, I just don't, to do this, what we do, all of this thing that we've chosen to do with our lives, you have to have an appetite or a desire to do this. Otherwise, it doesn't make sense.
Al Pacino, it is clear you still have your appetite.
That's great to hear.
It's been a real pleasure.
My pleasure. It was great talking to you. You have good questions. And this you can't get over, I know. I know. Someday, one day I'll take it off. But I don't.
The incredible story of the waiter with $1 billion in his pocket. Press red for the man who definitely didn't steal Hollywood on BBC iPlayer.